Welcome to DevMode.fm, a podcast dedicated to the tools, techniques, and technologies used in modern web development. I'm Andrew Welch from NY Studio 107.
I'm Patrick Harrington from Mildly Geeky in Boston.
And today we have on Brandon Kelly from Pixel and Tonic.
Hello.
And we also have Leah Stevenson from Pixel and Tonic.
Hello.
Is it Stevenson or Stephenson?
Stevenson.
Nice. I can edit out that other part. But anyway, the reason why we have Brandon and Leah on the podcast, not that we wouldn't want to talk to them anytime. We love them both, right? But they just released a little something from Pixel and Tonic called Craft CMS 3.1, Commerce 2, that includes Commerce Lite, and a new plugin store. So we wanted to get them on to talk about it because there's a whole bunch of cool new stuff in Craft 3.1 and Commerce 2. So, Brandon, if you were out felling timber in the Cascade Mountains in Oregon and some other lumberjack kind of walked up to you and said, well, what's awesome about Craft 3.1? What would you tell him?
The situation that's not going to happen for me.
Never say never, man.
Well, if that fellow lumberjack happened to also be a web developer that was familiar with Craft, then I would let them know that they basically don't need to worry about syncing database changes as often anymore. That if they're
and he says, "What's a database?"
And Brandon, you're going to have to shout over the sound from the chainsaws.
Yeah.
you're talking about project config, right?
Yes, we've made it possible for collaborating on a craft site without sharing database dumps all the time, pushing changes up to production, having them, you know, automatically sync up based on some deploy command you can run. We've doubled down on environment variable support, so you can type environment variable names directly into a bunch of system settings now. And then we've also added soft delete support. So, you know, if you accidentally cut down the wrong tree in Craft 3.1, you can press a button and revert that. Locate yourself to the wrong forest and chop the wrong forest down. You can undo the entire thing at once.
Well, that's going to be something that a lot of clients are really going to love, right? Because it happens all the time that people go in there and they'll delete something and they'll go, oh, crap.
You know? Yeah.
Yep. Does that cover the case of if I go in there and I delete a user?
That's a very common case, or at least it used to be. I think at some point in 3.0, we improved. Well, let me take it back a second. The issue that a lot of people have dealt with is that you delete a user and it gives you a dialogue that says, well, what do you want to do with this user's content? And it gives you two options. It doesn't select either one by default, but those two options are you can transfer it all to another user and you can pick that user, or you can delete it. You can have it all deleted. And what it meant by content was the user's entries or any, you know, if plugins are providing their own concepts of user-owned content, then they could hook themselves into that process as well and have that deleted or transferred as well. And what happened was a lot of people would see that. And I think, you know, people are so used to having the click confirmation dialogues that they would just see it. They would see the words delete. They'd click it and they'd click OK. And just assume the whole thing was a confirmation dialogue and not read any of the actual text. We've since improved that design, so it happens. I don't think we've heard of any big horror stories since we updated this dialogue. And basically, the change was that we've added a bullet list of what exactly you're going to get deleted here. So it's going to have a list of, like, you know, 1,500 entries, and, you know, plugins, if they have anything else, they could add to that bullet list.
That's great.
And I think that probably is just enough to, like, really, you know, hammer it home, like, this, you know, what you're choosing to do right now. This is more than a regular dialogue or confirmation dialogue.
Reconsider your actions.
Yeah, reconsider your actions here. Or at least read the thing and choose who you want to transfer it all to. That said, we're not so confident that our new design is going to be completely foolproof. So one of the benefits of soft deletes is yeah, you'll be able to not only resurrect the user, but then you can go into the entries section. You can, you know, find all the entries that just got soft deleted as well and resurrect them as well.
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, the other thing that I think is big for me anyway, is that there's an allow admin changes config where you can disable admin functions on staging and production so that effectively the only place you can make certain admin changes would be in local dev, or, you know, maybe you wanted them to be able to make it in staging and you've got a workflow that syncs down or whatever. But I think that's fantastic for two reasons. One, it helps with your workflow in terms of being able to ensure that it's a one-way flow, which is fantastic. And then the other reason why I think it's really awesome is you can use it with a craft solo, and it will make it such that the client can have a login on production, but they can't hurt the site.
Right. Kind of takes them back to simulating a craft client edition installed from craft 2.
Yeah, that's pretty fantastic. And you also got live preview that works across multiple domains. But I want to get the take from Leah in marketing. So we're going to kind of do like a yin-yang kind of thing here. So if you were out at Comic-Con dressed up as Batman and Robin walks up to you and says, hey, what are the cool marketing features in Craft CMS 3.1? Like, what would you tell them? In other words, like, how would you pitch this product? Like, what marketing angles would you be using in terms of the new features that are in there?
In 3.1?
Yes.
3.1 just makes, you know, Craft more developer friendly. It makes it easier for developers to use with project config. It makes it more efficient. And a lot of what we talk about in marketing with Craft is it allows agencies or whoever's building your site to spend their time and budget on building a site for you, building something that's unique to your brand, has the design and functionality that's important to you, and they don't have to spend their time wrestling with templates and the CMS. So with 3.1, we're just doing more to allow agencies and developers to be more efficient, which saves everyone time and money and frustration.
Nice. Well, I mean, I'm just a humble sheep herder, but what I would do, what I would demo to someone that maybe didn't know a whole lot about it, is I would open up the admin CP. I would show all of oh my God, I did it again. It's the CP. Brandon and I have gone back on this back and forth. I've got like some weird thing in my head where it's called the admin CP. And Brandon's like, no, it doesn't say that anywhere. All right. I would open up the CP, and on the front end, I would show like this nice blog content. And on the back end, I would go in there and I would say, we just fired this person. I delete that person. And then I reload the front end and I go, oh my God, all our content is gone. Right. I'd go back to the back end and I'd say, thanks to the new soft delete feature in Craft CMS 3.1, not a problem. Click the button, restore it. Boom. That's the kind of thing that an end user, like not the agencies that would be using it, but that an end user would be like, oh my God, like, thank you.
Yeah, you know? I can't wait for trainings now. Like, there are a couple parts of Craft CMS trainings that I do that I just put fear into my content authors, and I don't like that. It involves, hey, if you delete a user, be terrified, because if you click delete it, we're going to have to go and try to restore from your backup. Now it's at least a little bit more user-friendly, but as well, there's soft delete, which has also been, it gets into how we think about permissions and all that. It puts a big guardrail up against people making honest mistakes. I'm just so happy for it.
I mean, it's really fantastic. I've done similar things with when I'm showing someone how to use Git, because I've worked with people that they've never used Git before. And you check everything in, and then you go over to their computer, and then you delete everything, and they're like, what are you doing? And then you empty the trash, you know? And they're like, oh my God, what have you done? And then you're like, no, look, we're using version control now, no problem. Boom, bring it all back, you know? But that's really cool. I mean, I'm excited about these features, both from the point of view of using them. We are actually actively working on a project right now that uses Craft 3.1. And I can confirm that project config is freaking awesome. because it's allowing us to collaborate together to add stuff, add sections, add all sorts of different things. And it just makes a workflow so much nicer, right? We're still using database syncing to sync the actual content, but not having to worry about a field not existing because my colleague is the one that added it. I don't have it. I mean, it makes a big difference. I think it's amazing. But I'm also looking forward to it from the perspective of it gives some shiny new features for plugin developers to take advantage of, which is really cool. I mean, I like the way that you have done this, where all of the stuff that Craft can do, you're exposing to plugin developers. So if you want to use Project Config, you can. You know, if you want to use Soft Deletes, you can. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's really awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I like, and I know we've got other things with commerce and all that, but I mean, for Project Config, it's very much for developers. I think it strongly benefits developers. Soft Deletes strongly benefits content authors.
Right.
And the other thing that, you know, to anyone who maybe is still supporting Craft 2 sites, maybe more and more of your plugins are ready now that they've been ported. I think Soft Deletes is a great way to, you know, it'll make a lot more sense for a client to make that jump onto Craft 3 and put time and money and whatever else into it, because Soft Deletes are a real tangible, okay, I get it. This is why, you know, it's not just a behind the hood change that's making things easy.
You could easily make the argument that this is the number one feature about Craft 3 over Craft 2 for users right now.
Very much so.
Absolutely.
And I'm pretty sure that's the case because we've gotten a lot of support from people updating from Craft 2 just in the last week, just since launching.
Yeah, I believe it.
That is really awesome that Soft Delete is in there.
Yeah, but how does it work? Is it set to 30 days right now? Can we override that in the config? Yeah.
Right. Yeah, there's a new config setting called Soft Delete Duration, and by default it's set to 30 days. Mm-hmm. You can go in there, you can set it to zero if you just want to... I forget if that completely disables it or if
it's... Play it on hard mode, yeah.
Hard delete immediately. I think zero actually might just keep things in there in perpetuity, because there's actually situations where the system kind of relies on soft deletes now. Mm. For example, if you're let's say you're working on a site with a colleague and they add a new site and delete the old site, mm-hmm. and then they push all that to project config or push the new project config and you get pull it. If you like, basically what project config will do is it'll go and say, okay, well, I'll go ahead and add this new one, and then it'll delete the old one. And in the process, you will have lost all your content because Craft doesn't reassign content entries to the new site immediately. That's a pretty complicated, long, you know, process. So it does that over a background task in the queue, throws something in the queue. And if that old site is deleted immediately, hard deleted immediately, then the queue is going to try and load these entries. It's not going to find any because they all just got deleted through a cascade delete foreign key in the database. So we kind of need to give a little bit of time where, you know, that old site is deleted, but it's still somewhere in the database. And it's there in a way where we can still fetch the entries that were assigned to it and reassign them to the new site as that queue job, you know, works its way through. So anyways, yeah, so back to your question, there's a soft delete duration thing. You can change it to, you know, 60 days, you can change it to a week, whatever you want to do. And then there's also a new concept called garbage collection. Mm-hmm. So Craft isn't actually checking to see if it should be hard deleting content on every single request. That would be an unnecessary overhead for every single request. So instead, we've got a concept called garbage collection, which basically runs, you know, there's some configurable percentage chance that it will run on any given request. So each request, it'll just roll some dice, depending on the odds that you've configured it for. If it wins, then it'll go ahead and run this garbage collection routine. And part of that is deleting any soft deleted content that is due to be hard deleted. So even the 30 days, once you hit that, it's not going to go away immediately. It's kind of at that point up for hard deletion based on the next garbage collection routine runs.
And is that garbage collection, is there any way to like turn it off for requests and have it run on the CLI or maybe down the road?
Yeah, you can actually disable garbage collection automatically through, I forget, it's a garbage GC probability config setting or something like that. You can set that to zero, at which point it just won't ever run. And there's also a CLI command called GC that you can run anytime.
Yeah.
And that actually gives you the option to go ahead and delete all trashed items, regardless of whether they're due for hard deletion or not. Mm-hmm. So regardless of whether the system traditionally would consider them garbage yet versus just something that's soft deleted but still within its duration.
Interesting.
So set that up. If you wanted to, you could disable it, set up a task that runs at 3 a.m. and have it just do it then and there, right?
You could, yeah. Mm-hmm. If you don't want to add that extra tax to web requests, you could just do that. You could set that to zero and run it for a fun job.
All this probability and stuff, I'm having flashbacks to how PHP file sessions are handled.
Yep. Yep.
They do almost exactly the same thing.
They do. And there was something in Yi that did the same, that was modeled after the PHP stuff, and we modeled it after the Yi stuff. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's all...
Well, that makes sense.
And I'm sure PHP is modeled after JavaScript too. So, or, you know, modeled after something else. Who knows?
Man, I was, for some reason, I was like stumbling through the Yi docs sometime late at night. And this is probably a month or two ago before 3.1 was out. And I found the soft delete behavior. And I'm like, oh, that's how they did it, right? You guys are leveraging, there's a Yi package for that handles a lot of the soft delete stuff for you, right?
There is. So that one's, it's basically a behavior for records. And I think, I want to say one of the Yi guys, Alex Markov or whatever his last name is, he actually pointed that out to us. He found our GitHub issue about someone requesting soft deletes and put a comment in there. And that's how we found out about it. We checked it out. It's cool. It's perfect for record soft deleting. So we're using that. We've added a new trait that records can use that incorporates that behavior into the record without needing to configure it. Since most, you know, craft records and tables are going to follow our conventions and use the same date deleted column name and whatnot. So we've kind of simplified the implementation of that behavior to a point where you just write use soft delete trait and you're done. But then, of course, a lot of the queries in Craft aren't using records. They're just either, you know, they're generally going through the query builder. And so we've added a new query command called soft delete and query command called restore that are kind of modeled after that soft delete behavior. So there's multiple ways to get at soft deleted content, to soft delete content and to restore content.
Yeah. Well, I think Patrick is 100% correct here that this is a really great new feature that developers can use to kind of sell their clients on, you know, hey, look, maybe it's time to upgrade, you know, because they're going to be able to get this soft delete stuff.
Yeah.
I think everyone would really enjoy that, you know, whether or not it's actually happened to them or not on the site before in terms of deleting stuff. People like that security.
Right, for sure. And, you know, the other thing too is with Project Config, there's a higher likelihood that you'll need it. Again, there was the site scenario, but then there's also the scenario of, like, maybe you forgot to make sure everyone's databases were in sync before implementing Project Config. So even though you might all have the same news section or the same, you know, article matrix field or whatever that are all set to the same settings, maybe their UIDs in the database aren't the same. And if they're not the same, that's basically like the project config version of their ID. Yeah. And so if their UIDs differ, you know, then as soon as you sync up your project configs, you know, one of those sections is going to go away and the other one's going to come back that looks the same, but it's missing all its content now. Soft deletes, you know, provide a way to resolve that situation where you just, okay, fine. Well, I'll just look at my project config, you know, my config backups folder, get my old project config back, load that in, apply it, sync it. And then not only does the section, which also has soft delete support, not only does that come back, but so does all the content that got deleted alongside it.
Yeah. So that's a good point that we should mention is that whenever the project config is synced, it keeps a numbered backup of the older ones, right?
Right. So every change you make that results in a change to the project config, there's a storage/config backups folder, and we'll basically, you know, knock all the current ones down a notch. So if there was something in there called project.yaml.1, it'll become project.yaml.2, et cetera. And then another one gets added to the top that's now the current project config. And that's not ever loaded by the system. It's just there either for us when you write into support, it's now included in that support widget submission, all of those backups, or it's also for you if you want to have a way to revert a change that maybe didn't make its way into Git yet.
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, I've gone through the list of features that are in Craft 3.1, and they all make me really, really happy from a developer point of view. And even the soft delete thing makes me really happy because it's something that I can pitch to clients, you know? And I think that's fantastic. Well, why don't we talk about something else that you also, Brandon, you've got a thing for simultaneous releases. What is that?
Okay, we're talking about software development, right?
Yeah, I mean, oh man. Yeah, we're talking about software development. It's amazing to me. Like, you must like the pressure or something, because it.
I got a big team full of very talented people, and I got to put them to work.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, we launched three things, but they were, you know, led by three different lead developers. And, you know, I kind of got involved in helping coordinate everything. We always meet on Mondays and kind of sync up with each other's statuses and whatnot. But yeah, I mean, it's very manageable with a big team like this. So.
Well, it's kind of like the Iditarod, right? So the sled dogs, like people that don't know anything about it, they're like, oh, those poor dogs, you know. No, that's not the way it works. Those dogs love to run. They love to pull the sled. And so if you've got a dog that you're not putting them to work and making them run, it's an unhappy dog.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think developers like to be challenged. And we do plenty of that.
I agree. I mean, there are definitely times that I'm banging my head into the wall and I'm saying, why me, and rethinking my entire life. I mean, that definitely happens.
Well, but that's why there's whiskey.
Yeah. That's what whiskey is for. But there are also times that when something really challenging happens and I figure it out, I'm like, yeah, that's why I do this. You know what I mean? Like, I really enjoy that. Like, I enjoy the hard problems, and you've got a lot of really smart people on your team. So it makes sense to me, you know?
Yeah,
but you definitely have this penchant for being like, no, you know what, guys, we're going to release this all at the same time, right? So in addition to Craft 3.1, we also have Craft Commerce 2. And Craft Commerce 2, it's a big deal, right? The whole thing was rewritten, and it's literally, it's a baby, because Craft Commerce 2 was in beta for exactly 9 months, right? Well, so so it wouldn't be crazy to call it a baby, because it gestated for a good 9 months.
That is the rule of thumb. You're right. If you're building something that doesn't, if it takes more than 9 months, who knows? It's probably.
And this is the time we let the analogy just sit there. Yeah. Let's not go further, Andrew.
So I mean, like, logistically, it makes sense for us to coordinate these releases, because There's always dependencies across the things. So Commerce, in all honesty, like, that's, you know, it's been sitting in beta, but it's been in a very stable state for a long time. It's been more stable as far as support is concerned, as far as we can tell from support and bugs or bug reports. It's been more stable than Commerce 1 ever was for a while. But we really wanted Commerce Lite, the new Commerce Lite edition, to be part of the Commerce 2 launch. Mm-hmm. And we couldn't possibly do that until Craft had edition support. Right. And that was something we had been planning on doing in a 3.1. And we couldn't possibly do that without launching a new big update to the plugin store that, you know, supports editions on that end as well. The web side of it, service side of it, and also the Craft CMS client side of it. So, you know, we couldn't get Commerce out until Craft 3.1 and the new plugin store were out. So we just, you know, out of necessity, kind of try and coordinate those releases and make sure that, you know, Commerce 2 is being developed with the same target date as everything else.
Well, okay, so let's talk about Commerce 2. What are the major new features in here? If the lumberjack's girlfriend walked up to you she said, hey, you know, it's all well and good about this Commerce or Craft 3.1, but what about Commerce 2? Like, that's what I care about. So what would you tell her in terms of the major new things in there? I mean, so you rewrote the whole thing, but what else are some of the major changes in there?
Yeah, the biggest one is subscriptions. So that's something that's been like the number one feature of Commerce since its first release. And
Well, Brandon, the biggest one might be that it works with Craft 3, right?
Yeah.
Well, of course. I mean, that's why it had to be rewritten. But yeah, I mean, from a developer's perspective, the biggest thing is going to be subscriptions. That's something that we've included both in the Pro Edition and the Lite Edition, because we see it as like a very common use case, and oftentimes doesn't really require a very complicated site to have a use case for subscriptions. So it made sense to include it everywhere. It's Stripe only. Stripe is actually doing most of the work here. We've added in our gateway interface, you know, various ways to for third parties to implement subscription support. But as of right now, we've only first party added support for it through our Stripe plugin. But that's kind of the big thing. The other side of it is in rewriting it. You know, just like Craft 3, it's become much more extensible. Every gateway is now provided by a plugin. Even Stripe and PayPal and things like that. And in doing that, we've made the gateway API a lot easier to use for people that need that. We've made it, do a better job supporting third-party purchasable types. So even like our own first-party digital products plugin is kind of more of a first-class citizen in Commerce 2 than it ever was in Commerce 1. You know, just general extensibility improvements, developer improvements. You can create what we call reference numbers on orders now. So we've had a lot of requests for people that they want the order number to be something that's like the year dash and then some incrementing number based on the number of orders that have happened that year. Right. So that's possible in Commerce 2 now. And then we've got just a ton of things that we've kind of set the groundwork to start working on now. So Commerce 2.1 is already in the works, and you know, we've got several releases planned that are just full of exciting features we've been looking forward to building.
You know, that's something that I really enjoy. So I'm going to talk in an old yarn that's in the software development business, which is that if you want to build something right, if you want to figure out how to write some type of product or code correctly, what you do is you write it, you finish it, and then you redo the whole thing, right? Because you learn so much. Like, you go into it, no matter how much planning you do, you go into it with a certain set of assumptions. You're like, okay, I'm going to build it this way, right? And some of those assumptions may be wrong. The way that people end up using it may be different. So as a developer, I actually really enjoy being able to go in there and look at what I did, take the experience from building that thing, and have a fresh start at rebuilding it. Did you guys experience that with Craft 3 and
that
then
was,
also
yeah, I mean, like that happened numerous times just leading up to Craft 1.0, and then and then Craft 3 was definitely our most recent example of that, and Commerce 2 followed suit there as well.
Yeah, it's just the nature of development, though, right? Yeah, I mean, there are just things that you just don't know until you do it.
I mean, part of it's logistics, and you got to be realistic about how much you're going to be able to accomplish initially versus, you know, things that can wait until later. You know, sometimes it's best to start off with like a very focused use case and just ignore everything else and know you can rewrite things later to address more things. But, you know, there's the necessity of getting something to a completed state where you can start, you know, making money off it or whatever else, you know, like, you should get it out in the world and see if it helps anyone. It's better to help someone than to wait, you know, forever to help everyone, you know?
Yeah. I've got a buddy of mine that he builds houses for a living, and we were out having a beer and talking, and I was telling him about, you know, oh, I was redoing this whole thing. And he's just like, you developers are crazy. Like, we build a house, we don't go back in 2 years, tear it down and rebuild it, you know?
Yeah. But you're also building it for one family, one, you know,
right,
leasey, whatever. It's I think that the multiple use cases thing is the crazy thing about software development. Like, there's Craft itself is used for such a high variety of things, from simple brochure sites to these full API. I mean, like, you were at Dot.all, you saw Aaron Berkowitz's presentation about how Craft is used for PBS Kids.
Yeah.
You know, serving whatever it is, billions of requests per year. It's just hard to fathom, you know, how the thing you're building is going to be used once it's out there in the world.
Oh yeah. You release it into the wild and you're just like, you're doing what? Especially when you're doing what you are building with Craft, which is you're trying to create a set of Legos that people can put together whatever they want. Right.
Right.
So you're going to run just an incredibly wild gamut of things that people then try to do with it. But my response to my friend was that the reason you don't go back and tear the house down is because you can't, right? The expense of doing that is ridiculous, you know? And you're right that it's a much simpler use case, right? Because it's one family or whatever. But definitely occasionally people will build additions on and that kind of thing.
Sure.
But with software, it's a lot easier to tear it down and rebuild it.
Right. You know, if you're going to modify a house, you're going to do it in the most economical way because that cost to change what's already there is much higher than with code, for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, here we've got PHP Storm now. We just click a button and we can change the name of function across the entire code base without needing to worry about, forgotten code and whatnot. So,
and that's a connection that a lot of people that aren't in tech don't often make. And what I try to tell people is that the more that we can do up front to figure out exactly what you need, the better. And what I always say is, if you're building a house and then you decide you want a swimming pool on the second floor, well, we got to start over, right? Because you got to reinforce it. You got to do all this other stuff. You can't just throw it in the house. And I try to mention that it's kind of the same thing with software, that the better we can plan up front for this, the more likely it is that it's going to turn out the way that we want it. But anyway, I forget about this nonsense tangent. So commerce, Patrick is probably steaming and turning red.
No.
Commerce 2 looks amazing. We can use it on Craft 3 now. A lot of people have been pining away for that. Maybe a lot of people are waiting for that to happen in order to switch over to Craft 3 because their client site needs it. We're getting subscriptions, which is amazing. That is actually a feature that a client of mine that I've long wanted to switch over to Craft, that is one feature that we've been waiting for. And I realize there are other ways we could have done it in the interim, but I figured we just wait because we knew that it was coming. But let's talk about Commerce 2, the Pro and the Lite editions. So it sounds like Commerce Pro is basically what Commerce was for Craft 2. What is Commerce Lite? It's a subset of Pro, and what is the subset?
Yeah, it's a subset of Pro. It's very much implemented the same way as Craft Solo versus Craft Pro. So either way, it's the same code base. There's just something in the project config that's determining whether you're running Lite or Pro. And then the code itself kind of reacts to that. The use case for it is regular websites where they're not building it as a quote unquote e-commerce store, but it's a regular website that needs some form of e-commerce, but that's not the centerpiece of the website. I think, from a, rule of thumb perspective, like if you're building a website and like there's going to be a cart icon in the nav, like you're building an e-commerce store, you're not building a regular website, you're building a store, you should be using Pro. You're most likely going to be needing, some custom gateway work. You're most likely going to be needing to manage and fine tune your shipping and tax rules. You're going to need to hook commerce up to a fulfillment center, whatever it is, like you're going to have more, what we consider Pro or full featured needs for the site. If you're just building a regular website, commerce functionality was never part of the initial spec, or it was always on a nice to have list. And, maybe there's the idea of like, hey, we could create a members only section, or we could, do a one-off t-shirt run every now and then. We could, all these kind of, use cases for commerce, but not ones that define the store, not the type of things where like the client's really going to want to invest a couple weeks of their time in figuring out, what taxes they should be charging people up front, and what shipping costs they should be giving everyone, and worrying about multiple gateways, worrying about building a cart and letting you add multiple things to the cart, all these complexities. If those aren't there, then we've built Lite for that.
Right.
So Lite is Pro, but you're limited. It's like Pro, but you're limited to one single line item in the cart. You can have multiple quantity on that, but it's limited to one line item. And like at a high level, we're just kind of saying you don't get a cart. You get a cart in Pro, you don't get a cart in Lite. Technically, there's a cart, but it's limited to one line item.
It's a very small cart.
It's a very small cart. It's a hand basket. And you don't get access to all of the complicated shipping rules. You can set a shipping rate, but you don't get to create a bunch of conditions on that rate, and you can't create multiple rates, and you can't add, you know, all that kind of fine-tuned stuff that Pro offers. Same thing for tax rules. You know, everything's just kind of more simplified for more simple use cases. And we're packaging all that up as the light edition, and we're charging only $199 for it as opposed to $999.
Yeah, and I love that subscriptions is part of that, because the aforementioned website that I've been waiting for subscriptions, it can use the light version, right? Because basically people go there, they can choose what subscription they're going to sign up for, but they're only doing that one thing. Yeah. In the checkout process, and away they go, right?
Yeah.
And the other thing, I'm assuming I'm going to build this site, move it over to Craft, and I'm assuming that if we implement it with Commerce to Light, and then at some point down the road he decides that he wants to add, you know, additional things to the cart, like maybe you can add a t-shirt or, you know, whatever, I assume we can just pay you some money and get Pro, and everything that was there will continue to work, but then we'll have the expanded functionality. Is that how it works?
Yeah, and that's one of the big benefits of having it all be one code base. Mm-hmm. So you're not actually installing a new plugin if you were to upgrade to Pro. All you're doing is, you know, effectively switching a string from Lite to Pro in the project config and paying us some money, and away you go. So the code doesn't change. The database doesn't change. You're just allowed to put more things in it now. And so we'll offer you an upgrade for the difference, so $800.
So magically, your cart just gets bigger,
right?
As opposed to being limited to putting one little thing in that dainty little cart. Now we can just throw as much stuff as we want in there, as well as the complicated shipping rules. Wow,
correct.
That is really cool. So, Leo, my understanding is that you folks are big on eating your own dog food. So, are you using Commerce 2 to power anything at Pixel and Tonic?
Yeah, we've been using Commerce 2. To power the plugin store since the launch of Craft 3.
Interesting. So I that gives me great confidence. I love to see it when a developer of a product that I depend on also is dogfooding it and using it for their own livelihood. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, I just think that's so critical, right? Because if something doesn't work in commerce, Leah, I mean, you know, you're going to be in trouble, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So what do you have any marketing angles or other things that you might want to mention about Commerce 2 in terms of if you were sitting down to talk with someone about reasons why they might be interested in Commerce 2, like what would you tell them?
Well, Commerce 2 and Commerce Lite are super exciting. Subscriptions is big. Mm-hmm. You're seeing in e-commerce more and more moving to a subscription-based model. So being able to have that out of the box is a game changer. With Commerce Lite, it really does allow sites running content subscription services or even sites that would like to take donations to have a $199 option to have that functionality on their site. So that's super exciting. I mean, Commerce 2 has so much in terms of being able to put whole categories of products on sale. There's been a lot of updates to promotions, which just from a feature comparison, you know, really make Commerce 2 so much more robust out of the box and really a contender against the other e-commerce platforms out there. Moving gateways into plugins is exciting. That also gives us room to grow and utilize other payment gateways. So those are kind of the big things that we look at in terms of how we're marketing Commerce 2 and Commerce Lite.
Yeah, that's really cool. I'm very much looking forward to implementing this site, getting it up and running. But I've got a question, I guess, under the hood. So are plugin purchases, are those technically subscriptions from your point of view? Like, is that what they are under the hood, Brandon?
They're not implemented as subscriptions. Because with subscriptions, you kind of have to like predefine what the plans are. And, you know, those are defined on Stripe's end. And, you know, we don't want to have to do that for every single plugin in the store. And, in you know, plugins that have multiple editions have to define multiple of these subscriptions per. And we also want a little bit more flexibility on you know, being able to offer you discounts on renewals potentially, or being able to line up your renewal dates between multiple plugins, and at that point give you one single charge that covers everything that was due that day. And there's no way to do that without not only creating a subscription per plugin edition, but creating a subscription per, you know, license, craft license, per, you know, dates that line up, kind of thing. Like, there's just, it just realistically wouldn't have been possible to do it with subscriptions without ending up with like thousands and thousands of subscription plans that we have to manage in our Stripe account. So instead of that, we're keeping track of expiration dates for licenses. If the license is set to be auto-renewable, which is something people can enable from their Craft ID account, then that date comes and we'll just automatically charge their card. Otherwise, they can, you know, they'll be notified that their license is expired, and they can go into Craft ID and they can just choose to renew it for 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 years at that point.
And this is off topic, but our normal plugin updates and craft updates automatically set to automatically renew in Craft ID?
No, nothing's set to renew automatically by default. You have to opt into that.
Okay, interesting.
So I think it's great though that Craft or Commerce 2 is flexible enough that you guys can implement something as crazy as the custom plugin licensing system that you have, right? I mean, that should give any developer confidence that they're wondering, you know, can Commerce 2 do this? You can just point to the plugin store and say, look, we're already doing it, right?
Yeah, and the most interesting thing we're doing there is we're actually running Commerce as an API. So it's not a traditional Commerce site in that there's no forms that post to a Commerce controller or anything like that. Like, it's all just we have our API that manages a wide variety of things, from giving you update notifications to, you know, to assigning plugin licenses to your craft license, to creating a craft license, you know, all kinds of different things. And that same API also has endpoints for creating a cart, updating a cart, purchasing a cart. And those are the API endpoints that the plugin store within Craft and the plugin store on plugins.craftsunions.com now. That's the API that those things are using to actually manage your carts and purchases.
Yeah, so, the more and more websites that I'm working on are API driven type stuff. So that's really, really awesome to see.
Yeah.
So you mentioned plugins.craftcms.com. That's another thing that you did a whole bunch of stuff on, right? So this is a redone. It's no longer just kind of like, oh, you know, here's the list of stuff. This is actually a freestanding plugin store now, right?
It is, yes. So for the first time ever, you can buy plugins online without a craft install, which is going to be really handy for a lot of situations where people are running servers with outdated OpenSSL libraries, where their local plugin stores can't even connect to our API because it's requiring HTTPS and the protocol is out of date. So we can now just point them, hey, just go to plugins.craftsunions.com and buy it there instead. And soon we'll be adding Craft itself to it. So you'll be able to buy Craft for the first time ever right from the website. And yeah, it's actually pretty cool. It's all built on a Vue app that's shared between CraftCMS and plugins.craftsunions.com, or at least most of the components there are all shared between the two. It's a Nuxt app, so it's the first time we've built anything with Nuxt, and that was really fun. And the actual purchasing is handled by Craft ID. So when you click buy on the plugin store, rather than implement a second cart on plugins.craftsunions.com, we already needed a cart on Craft ID for, you know, renewing plugin licenses and whatnot. So we just go ahead and redirect you over to your Craft ID account and add the plugin to your cart there, and then you can do the checkout process from Craft ID.
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, there are a number of scenarios where it's really useful to be able to purchase a license for a plugin and hopefully Craft soon in a freestanding place and not needing to have a site. And there are definitely times where it's convenient that you can just go into the existing site and just add it right there, and that's awesome. But there are also cases where having a freestanding place where you can point a client and say, go buy this.
Yeah.
It's really, really, really
good. Just have it assigned to their own Craft ID account right from the start. No transferring required.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing too, that isn't possible yet, but is now a possibility, is adding, you know, bulk license purchase discounts, you know, because for the first time ever, you'll be able to go to Craft ID and go ahead and buy 10 Craft Pro licenses and 10 SEOmatic licenses all in one go. You know, maybe
I like the, we'll wanna, I like the way you think.
Maybe we'll want to add, you know, a 10% discount off if you buy 10 or more licenses and things like that. Like, and so for the first time, we'll have that as a possibility. It's something that we've done privately, but it's always required us to just send an invoice via PayPal and manually right. create 10 licenses or whatever it, you know, I forget what the actual numbers are, 15 maybe, but it'll be really nice to be able to automate that. And then also to provide those discount options to plugin developers as well that want to start adding those sorts of discounts.
Another cool feature there too, is that you can buy them for multiple years. So we've heard a lot from people doing client work that they want to buy 3 years worth of updates for both craft and plugins so that cards aren't being charged or they're not having to bill clients annually. And so that's an exciting thing that you can now do with plugins.
Yeah, and you can do that within both the web plugin store as well as the in-app plugin store. Either way, once you've got something in your cart, if it's a new craft license or a new plugin license, you can choose how far back you want the expiration date to go.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And Leah, I think you meant to say if someone wants to buy 3 years of craft and SEOmatic.
100%. Sorry about that.
Because you know, you got to factor in like how often is this plugin developer actually going to be updating their plugin. You know, I don't know about SEOmatic.
He's kind of a slacker. Yeah.
That doesn't get my blood, does it, Andrew?
You wound me. I mean, there are two ways you can think about it, right? Frequent updates are either, wow, that's awesome, he's adding stuff all the time, or wow, he's got a lot of bugs to fix.
I think most developers equate active development with as being a good thing.
Yeah, it's more, and a lot of agencies and other organizations are on board with doing, you know, quote unquote, agile development. So they're used to that kind of cycle of stuff. So it's not really a big deal.
Maybe on the subject of updates, maybe it's also worth noting that in the new plugin store, both the in-app one and the website one, on plugin pages, we actually show the changelog now. Which is pretty exciting because that's another kind of proof point on whether you want to invest in this plugin or not is, you know, I do think most people see updates as a very good thing, and being able to see right there when you're evaluating plugins, like what their history looks like, is pretty cool.
I am right now scrolling through the SEOmatic change log on plugins.craftcms.com, and I want to report right here and now. It's a 5-minute read.
We probably should add some read time plugin to that.
It's a 5-minute read. Mm-hmm. Everything's a 5-minute read. So the other thing that I'm really excited about the standalone plugin store from a developer point of view is that I now have a canonical link.
Yes.
That I can put on my website that I can say, this is SEOmatic, like, or a buy button, a CTA that says, go here.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
that's huge. We've heard that as feedback since the day the plugin store launched, that it's kind of annoying that we don't have any sort of public archive or plugins or anything like that. And the best they could do is link to, you know, that old plugins.craftcms.com, which was just a table with a list of all the plugins that are in the system. And
Or you send them a GitHub link. But, you know, sending that client GitHub link, they're like, well, what?
Yeah, the hell GitHub is, GitHub is not exactly where you want to be, like sending people if you don't know that they're developers,
right?
So,
and plus, it can't be a buy button, right? Like, you can't link to GitHub. There was no way that if you had a website that listed your own plugins, there was no way you could have a button where you're like, buy this thing, right? Yeah. So that this gives us that.
Yeah, the call to action is, hey, go install Craft 3.
Yeah.
Then go to the plugin store, search for this, click the buy button. You know, yeah, it's not great. So
having that canonical link is absolutely fantastic. But I think I got to talk to Benjamin. We got to talk about the SEO on it though. We gotta no, I'm not even making a joke. Like it would be really nice if when you link to that, it gave an excerpt of the description and the plugin icon, you know, like Slack would unfurl it and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I agree. The other thing that would be cool is if you could upload some sort of hero image for your plugin that actually shows up in the plugin store, but also would be like that little Twitter image thing that you know, gets thumbnailed in Slack and whatnot. You know, one of the really cool things about the plugin store is it's part of this thing we call CraftNet, which is a gigantic craft install that provides all the services for the APIs for plugin store and for API and purchasing and all that kind of stuff. And that's all up on GitHub at github.com/pixelandtonic/craftnet. So you can submit a pull request if you would like.
Well, I could submit a pull request or I could just file an issue and complain about it.
Yeah, that's true. That's another option. Actually, that is realistically, please do that. Please file an issue there and we can, you know, get it onto the list. We've got, now that we're past the launch, we've got a number of tidying up type of things that we'd like to get to, and it seems like improving SEO should be high on that list.
This is a lot of really cool. I'm sorry, Leah, did you have something you wanted to say?
Oh, I was just agreeing that improving the SEO is something we want to do there.
Yeah. I'm talking to my people. I like it.
Have you written SEOmatic for Vue yet? Or next app?
No. What most people are using is a package called ViewMeta. And it's very much what you would expect from a kind of node package in that it's, you know, it's very declarative. It's programmatic and you've got components and objects. But that's probably what you would want to use to wire this up. And that's incidentally the same thing that you can and probably should be using for the documentation pages. There are ways that you can add that component to ViewPress and you can do it there.
Oh,
too.
Cool.
So it's the same thing. So this is pretty amazing. You folks have released a whole lot of stuff, but I got to ask this. The 24-hour window around the release time, and I want an answer from both of you. Did you have more hours of sleep or more cups of coffee? Brandon.
Well, I had two cups of coffee, which is one more than I usually have ever had in a single day.
Wow.
It's zero. So I got very little sleep because of that. I wouldn't say it was necessarily productive, but it wasn't sleep.
So do you sleep more than 2 hours though?
Usually I sleep about five.
Oh, okay.
5 or 6.
All right. So you had fewer cups of coffee than sleep. So how about you, Leah?
I don't drink coffee.
What?
No, I don't drink coffee, but I had quite a few cups of tea and it was definitely more than the sleep coffee? I had. I have, but okay. I don't drink it anymore.
Someone from the New York Times is going to listen to this and write a whole article about how successful people don't drink coffee.
No, you may think it's a crazy question, but I was watching an interview with Mike Tyson, the boxer, right? He said he's never in his entire life had a cup of coffee, like never even had one. Not that he's not a coffee drinker, just that he's never had one, which I was just like, really? Like, how is that even possible? But I mean, he also said that he was smoking weed and doing coke at 12. So,
well, that was iced tea. Said that he never had a bagel and had never had coffee. And they now have a video of him actually trying them for the first time in his life.
Huh.
Yeah.
He probably thought coffee was awful, right?
I don't know. I'm looking at it now. I'm trying to find out.
Your first experience with coffee usually is not
vanilla latte at Starbucks or something.
Yeah, you got to go flavored or something for your first time.
Yeah, like a real foo-foo, whatever.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, seriously, this is an incredible amount of stuff that you folks have released in a simultaneous manner, and I'm excited. I mean, whenever one of these big releases happens, I feel like a kid with a new set of toys.
Yeah, it's like an Apple product release for me, which is saying a lot.
Well, it's, and we
different. Go ahead.
We didn't even talk about plugin editions.
Oh yeah, we gotta talk about that. We gotta talk about that.
Well, we covered Commerce Lite and Pro.
Well, yeah,
but
it's important because.
Yeah, because that's exposed to developers. So in order for you to have Commerce Lite and Commerce Pro, with one code base, you necessarily had to have addition support, right? And that's something that you're opening up to plugin developers?
Yeah, we're playing it safe there. We are kind of worried that if we add addition support for every plugin developer, they're just going to start adding additions, even though they shouldn't, even though like it's probably not a good idea, just because developers have a tendency to want to play with new toys that they get. We think that would ultimately be a bad customer experience in the plugin stores. If all of a sudden every single thing listed in there is, you know, now you got to pick which edition you want. And so we're keeping it limited to, you know, plugins that we decide would like really, really warrant having an edition. So if a plugin developer wants to add multiple editions, they can write into us and kind of make their case. We're mostly concerned with the use cases. So if you can provide, you know, here's two use cases for my plugin that are pretty different, and here's how two editions could meet each of those without needing to create two separate plugins. You know, then there'll be a pretty good chance we'll give you a pass on that. But we want you to go through that exercise and kind of make your case to us before we make every single customer using the plugin store need to start making a decision, you know, for you.
Yeah. And I think that makes sense, because at some point for content to be useful, it needs to be curated. And you're essentially saying, no, you know, we're going to be the gatekeeper to make sure that the plugin store doesn't turn into a, you know, a cesspool.
Right? Yeah. It's just, you know, it's an added complexity to the plugin store. And, you know, we want to keep the plugin store as simple as possible. So we just want to keep that, hold on to that complexity, and except for cases where it really makes sense. One place where it really makes sense is plugins that are already out there that are already selling two different editions of themselves. There's three cases of this right now. There's Ben Croker's Campaigns plugin, which has, you know, kind of a standard edition and then a separate pro edition that you need to buy in addition to the standard edition,
right?
In order to unlock various pro features in standard edition. And then there's also Verb's Feed Me plugin, and then there's Soul Space's Freeform versus Freeform Pro. So in those cases, like, to achieve quote-unquote edition support in Craft 3.0, they've already kind of added this extra complexity to the plugin store by creating two plugins for what really is a single plugin. And so in those cases, adding an addition to the light versions of those plugins would actually simplify things. So in that case, right, it's a no-brainer. Yes, we should be giving these people access to light and pro editions. So those will definitely happen. We'll be working with those plugin developers to get that to happen in the coming weeks, I guess. And then, you know, we'll kind of play it on a case by case basis from there. I know Ben Parizic has written in, he wants to add some additions, and, you know, there's going to be others as well, but we just want to tread lightly.
This is a case where my laziness is paying off, right? So back when Craft 2 was around, I'm like, no, I'm not going to charge for any plugins until Pixel and Tonic develops a craft store in Craft 3. And then when Craft 3 came out, I'm like, no, I'm not going to implement any additions until that's an official part of the spec. So now I don't have any work. I got to go back and undo. Right?
Yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm.
But I am interested in the additions, and it's possible I might be writing into you soon as well.
And I should say, like, if you have a commercial plugin and you want to add a free tier to it, there's a pretty good chance we're going to be perfectly fine with that.
Right.
If you have a free plugin and you want to add a commercial tier to it, and it's, you know, it's a bunch of new features and not, as opposed to things you're already giving away for free, then we'll probably be pretty okay with that. Where things get a little more complex is if you wanted, you know, two commercial editions, that's where we'd really want to spend a little bit more time scrutinizing your plan and make sure that it makes sense for customers.
That means I'm going to be scrutinized.
Yeah. Well, and then the other thing is, like, we're hoping the vast majority of plugins are going to be fine with two editions. And when that's the case, we're going to call require them to be called Lite and Pro, just as kind of one step toward making things a little bit more intuitive for customers.
Is Lite always free or no?
No, it doesn't have to be free. And that was actually a big point of debate internally, is that, you know, I kind of felt like Lite didn't imply free, that Lite still kind of implied commercial, and there should be some other lower free tier if something was actually free. But at the end of the day, we decided to settle on just Lite and Pro. And then in the very rare case where a plugin has a good need for three editions, we'd give them a plus right in between those two. So Lite plus Pro.
I think you already have the name. And I'm still going to lobby for it, even though I know you think I'm crazy for considering it. But I think I still think that for some plugins, I would like to have it so that if someone is running on a Craft Solo install, that my plugin could also be free, right? So you already have the Lite and the Pro nomenclature. You could use Solo for things that are free if they're running on a Craft Solo install.
Mm-hmm.
I know you hate it.
That hasn't resonated with anyone else besides you.
I know. So I'm used to that. Believe me.
Yeah. I mean, the other side of it too is like, you know, like Solo, like the limitation you get with Craft Solo is you know that you're stuck to one user account, and so like that feature pairing really. You know, if you only have one user, you're not actually limited by one user account. So it makes sense. It's basically like if you're only one person, you only need one account, go ahead and use Solo. Don't worry about it. And the nature of, you know, of projects tends to be, if it's a client site, you're probably going to want more than one user account. You're going to want an admin account for you. You're going to want a, you know, client account for the client, at least one, and probably others. So it all kind of makes sense. But like that, plugins aren't just like, you know, that, like, I don't know what a use case for a plugin would be where it would make sense to give away other features for free just because of that one user account limitation. Because Craft isn't doing that anywhere. You know, it's not, I don't know. It just seems like a strange, like an oddball pairing. Like I'm glad you're able to save some money because you didn't need a second user account. But why does that mean you should save some money? Because why does having one user account mean you should save some money on all these other features?
So my rationale for that would be kind of twofold. So one is that I'm kind of coming from the gaming sphere, which is a place that I used to live in terms of developing games. And the model there is freemium, right? Everything is free. Mm-hmm. You just click the button, you install it. And the reason people do that, and Leah, back me up here, is barrier of entry, right? You don't want people to have to, you know, slap anything down. You want them to just be able to install it and use it, right? And then if there are certain things that they need on top of that, then they can upgrade to the, you know, well, games are a little bit different. They're all doing microtransactions. But from this point of view, if you end up needing additional functionality, then you can purchase it, right? And that's to keep the barrier of entry low so that they can install it. The other angle that I'm kind of coming at it from is that most of the sites, not all, but most of the sites that are running on Solo are lower budget projects, right? And I would rather have them using SEOmatic than rolling their own or using some other plugin that is free, but maybe doesn't really do the job.
Yeah. I mean, one way you could implement this is like you could create that light tier for SEOmatic. And then within that, you could, you know, have a check, like make sure it's running Craft Solo or, you know, I mean, I don't know if that would necessarily be a great customer experience, but you could choose to, you know, have less feature limitations if you're running Craft Solo than if you were running Craft Pro or something like that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. I mean, that would be possible, but then it wouldn't really leverage the built-in licensing, right? In other words, if Lite was free, there would be no way to get it to show, hey, you've got to license this if it's running on a Craft Pro install, you know? And my other rationale for doing it is that, so yeah, I would rather that they're using my plugin to begin with, both because, you know, it does a good job with what it does, And I would rather have sites using it than not, but also it gets developers familiar with it. So if they use it on their own personal freelancer or agency site, mm-hmm. and they use it because it's free, they're familiar with it. They like it. They know how to use it. They know how to work with it. When their client comes in wanting a pro edition, that's what they're going to buy. Like, it's not even going to be a question.
Yeah. You know? Another thing anyway, you can consider too, because like, you know, you want to be getting something out of this when you're giving something away for free, right? Like you want,
right.
You ideally get their email. I guess that's why you want there to be a real license.
Right.
You know, you could create a widget on your site that says, hey, like sign up for your one free SEOmatic license. And, mm-hmm. you know, just say in the thing, like, you know, please only use this on Craft Solo site or whatever, but you know, this is for personal evaluation only, not for professional work, you know, whatever. And, you know, people just have an honor system there, but you could do that and then write an API request when someone enters their email that creates a license for them and sent, you know, creates a real SEOmatic Pro license for them and sends them a license key and says, you know,
all right, well, we'll continue to talk about it, and I'll probably at some point come to the realization that I'm wrong, but we'll keep talking about it. But I don't want to bore people too much with this stuff, and you know, maybe I'll even cut it out. I mean, I don't know, but I think the number of people that are interested are probably the number of people that are on this call, and maybe not even that many, right? It may be just me, so I don't want to bore people. But anyway, you folks have done an amazing job releasing all this stuff. Has it been a painful birth, this 9-month gestation period for Commerce 2 and Craft 3.1, or did everything go pretty smooth?
The launch has been, I don't know about painful, but it definitely has been on kind of par with Craft 3.0 in that it's a very complicated update. This time, not so much from a developer's perspective in terms of, you know, there's not any breaking changes, at least intentionally. But you know, we're like the project config, like if you think about it, we're changing the source of truth in Craft 3.1. It's gone from the database is the source of truth to now your project config is the source of truth. And
for some things,
no, well, for everything that's not quote unquote content. And so the migrations that kind of get you from A to B there are pretty complicated. And any install out there that has data in a way that we weren't expecting, just because, you know, older craft sites have a tendency to, you know, you change a matrix field to something else, and it turns out we had a bug where we weren't cleaning up and deleting your matrix blocks if you did that, and, you know, things mm-hmm. like all of a sudden all these bugs that have been comfortably brushed under the rug, or we've just not known about them because they never had any effect on anything. All of a sudden they're all becoming these these show-stopping issues where the migration to get into project config takes a dump.
Does your support staff start getting this kind of feeling in the pit of their stomach on any of these major releases, like bracing for the impact, like a storm?
Yeah,
is coming?
I mean, we were expecting it for sure, just because we know how complicated this update is under the hood. So it's definitely led to an uptick in support. It does seem like the vast majority of people are updating just fine. We've gotten a lot of positive praise. People are loving Project Config. They're, you know, they're amazed, you know, when it works, which is most of the time, it's, you know, it's a magical experience. And all of a sudden you're off to the races managing, you know, multiple environments with a single environment, you know, Project Config file. But yeah, so it's definitely like more on par with, like, you know, from a support taxing perspective, more on par with Craft 3 launch than a Craft, the, you know, minor release or even most, you know, most .x releases. So it's been a long week. We've been doing our best, working around the clock to try and help people get updated and get on their way. But it's led to, like, yesterday Brad and I probably spent 2 or 3 hours looking into a particular Craft 2.x to Craft 3.1 update issue that we've we've come to the conclusion that it's just a MySQL bug that, you know, that under particular circumstances, you know, after all the other things MySQL had to do within this request, it gets to a point where it just decides to stop enforcing cascade deletes in foreign key constraints. Oh, wow.
I didn't know there was a MySQL timeout.
I don't know. We can't explain it. That's the best conclusion we've got. All of our Google searching has led to nothing.
Brandon, you need to go increase your max execution time.
It's not that. We're able to put a breakpoint right where this issue happens and confirm even, doing queries one at a time, even taking the transactions out of the equation. It's just, there's this one place where, like, for whatever reason, MySQL decides not to go ahead and delete, to cascade off that delete to other rows that have foreign key constraints to it. Resulting in an integrity constraint violation down the road. In that place, we've literally just had to add a second delete statement for this other table that was supposed to just automatically get rows deleted when we were expecting it to.
Those are the fun kind of bugs.
And it's stuff like that. And it's like that. That's the workaround there. If we didn't make any code change, is if you did update to Craft 3.0. Let's say 37. First, and then went from that to Craft 3.1. It's all the exact same code that gets run either way, the exact same migration code that's run, either route you take. But just having that second request take over the second half of that upgrade seems to work around it. So it's just been, it's been stuff like that where it's just like this here, annoying, things that we've got to deal with that affect, a handful of people. And
so we'll get through it. It sounds like pretty soon you're going to have the same amount of hair that myself and Brad have.
Brad has a nice full head of hair. He just chooses to shave it off.
Well, maybe I do too. Yeah. You never know, but probably not. Well, this has been fantastic. Thank you both for coming on and talking to us about Craft 3.1. And Leah, I still think you're awesome, even though you're not a coffee drinker.
Okay. Well, thank you.
I
appreciate that.
I'm going to let it slide. Yeah, I know that my validation is super important to you.
Yep, it is.
But that about wraps it up for another episode of the devmode.fm podcast. To have every episode delivered to your favorite podcast player, subscribe via RSS or via iTunes or Google Play. And if you like what we're doing, leave us a review. And Brandon Kelly has told me numerous times that no one listens to the end. So if you listen to the end of this, tweet at Brandon Kelly and let him know you did. You can also follow us on Twitter at DevModeFM, and we'd love to hear your thoughts about this episode. Please leave us a comment on the DevMode.fm website. For the DevMode.fm podcast, I'm Andrew Welch.
I'm Patrick Harrington.
And thank you, Leah and Brandon.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Patrick is frantically messaging me. I've got a client call.
I've got to drop.
I got a client. I got to go. I've got kids to wake up and get